The Sports Report is brought to you by iHome, the number one brand in digital audio. From Lightning Dock alarm clocks to rechargeable Bluetooth boomboxes and quality affordable headphones, iHome has you covered. To learn more, head to iHomeAudio.com. Welcome to episode number 431 of the Sports Report. I'm Paul Roberts on GrizzlyProductions.tv. New shows every Monday on The Grizz. The show is free in the podcast section of iTunes. And you can follow me on Twitter at the Sports RPT. The Sports RPT on Twitter. That's a great way for you to interact with the show. Always appreciate your comments there and keep the five-star reviews coming in the podcast section of iTunes. We have a lot to talk about. Thanks so much for tuning in. The Rio games are over. I'll look back at the highlights and the lowlight, and his initials are RL. Now he's going to feel it in his wallet. I'll have the latest on Ryan Lochte. Have you heard the joke about two Mongolian wrestling coaches walking into a bar? Neither have I, but I do have a wild story that's no joke from the Olympics. It was like Monday Night Raw broke out in Rio. Wait until you hear this. The college football season is almost here. The Associated Press Top 25 preseason poll is out. No surprise who is number one. I'll run down the top teams in the country and tell you about my recent interview with my buddy Phil Steele, college football guru. His preview magazine is a must read. It's by far the best on the market. You'll find out who Phil is picking to win the national championship. And I'll tell you this, it is not Alabama. I'll go through his picks conference by conference. Coming up, I watched my first UFC fight on Saturday, and wow, was that a battle royale. Amazing fight between Conor McGregor and Nate Diaz, and wait until you hear how much money this baby brought in. Unbelievable. Only cost me $5 to watch it, and it was well worth that price. Man, what a fight. All of that on episode 431 of the Sports Report. Again, I'm on Twitter at the Sports RPT. You can always find me there. We're with you Mondays, 30 to 40 minutes, high energy, fast paced sports talk without the homerism that you're used to. And you can go back and listen to previous shows, whether it's on the Grizz or in the podcast section of iTunes. I don't want to spend too much time on Ryan Lochte, but you can't avoid the story. In 20, 30, 40 years, when people bring up the Rio Olympics, like it or not, Lochte's name is going to come up. Just no two ways about it. Well, now this clown is paying the price for his actions in Brazil after a night of boozing. Two of his endorsement deals are done. Over with. Speedo ended its deal with Lochte, saying they can't condone his behavior, and Lochte had a relationship with Speedo for more than 10 years. That is now out the window. Speedo is donating $50,000 to help kids in Brazil through the Save the Children program. That 50 grand is part of Lochte's endorsement fee. And then after that went down, we learned that Ralph Lauren announced it would not be renewing Lochte's contract. So whoever said that all publicity is good publicity was wrong. Lochte is suffering because of his actions, rightfully so, and he still faces discipline from the U.S. Olympic Committee, and I hope that they drop the hammer on this joker. You know, what really annoyed me as I'm watching the interview with NBC's Matt Lauer, the most recent interview, is the quote when Lochte says, "It's how you want to make it look like, whether you call it a robbery or whether you call it extortion or us just paying for the damages, we don't know. All we know is there was a gun pointed in our direction and we were demanded to give money." I mean, that infuriated me. I thought, this guy still doesn't get it. Does he think that we're all that stupid out there? Even after the truth came out and we got the real story, Lochte is still flapping his gums to Matt Lauer about robbery and extortion. Seriously, dude? You got drunk, you vandalized a gas station bathroom, and you have the nerve to bring up robbery and extortion? It was almost like he still thought that he was the victim here. I mean, the guy is clueless. The only reason the gun was brought out was because the security guard thought that Lochte and the other three U.S. swimmers who were with him were going to take off without paying for the damages. They wanted somebody to pay, and I don't blame them. If they hadn't acted like fools, there would have been no trouble. There would have been no gun. And please, please don't refer to Lochte as a kid. If you do, I have to get out my old rusty nail and stick it right into my eyeball. The guy is 32 years old. He's not a kid. We're not talking about a 19-year-old gymnast here or a 19-year-old swimmer. This guy is 32 years old. Grow up. And if you make a mistake, and listen, we've all made mistakes. Own up to it. You know, don't make up some story about a gun being pointed at your head and how you refuse to lie down like you're some sort of tough guy. Please. He said the other swimmers, they got down on the ground, but not him. No, he just said whatever to the guy with the gun. Like he's Rambo or something like that. I mean, what a clown. He admitted he was still intoxicated when he spoke with Billy Bush of NBC after this thing went down. And there was so much speculation about security in Brazil before the games even started. And then for Lochte to add fuel to the fire like he did, it was terrible. Just ridiculous. And there were some incidents there. Stray bullets landed in the equestrian arena. Portugal's education minister was held at knife point on a busy street. A security officer took a wrong turn. He went into a bad area and ended up getting shot to death. Two rowing coaches from Australia were robbed. So Rio had its problems. But Lochte created a completely unnecessary mess. And the host country did not deserve that. He did apologize to a Brazilian broadcaster, which was the least he could do. I mean, this is a guy, he's won 12 medals. He's won 6 gold medals in his career. But now, when you mention the name Ryan Lochte, what are you thinking about? You're thinking about this robbery story. You're not thinking about those 12 medals. He is always going to be remembered for getting wasted, vandalizing a gas station, and making up a story. The line that I'll never forget is when he initially told Matt Lauer, quote, "We couldn't make this story up." Oh, really? Sounds like you just did. Oh, that is a classic. We couldn't make this story up. What a dope. I mean, if you look up clown in the dictionary, you'll find a picture of Lochte there. And I'll also never forget Hope Solo calling Sweden a bunch of cowards after Sweden beat the U.S. women's soccer team. She's another one who needs to grow up. A lot of positive stories to get to. We'll do that on the other side of this quick break and talk a lot of college football. If you love college football, you want to stay tuned. Big preview coming up. We'll get into the McGregor-Diaz rematch and a very, very funny story from the Olympics, too. It's all on episode 431 of The Sports Report. Thanks again for tuning in. I'll tell you what, finally some gorgeous weather here. I'm in Pennsylvania, about an hour from Philly, and we've been dealing with a lot of days, 90-plus, hot, humid, just miserable. You just walk outside, you start sweating. Today, the high's like 78, 80 degrees. Beautiful. of course, come Friday, back up to 90. But enjoy it while it lasts. Today's show is brought to you by iHome. iHome has a new weather-tough line of Bluetooth speakers. They are waterproof, rust-proof, and military-standard shock-proof. From Bluetooth and docking clock radios to portable wireless speakers, iHome combines great value and exceptional quality. iHome also offers a full line of headphones and earbuds for the fitness guru, the traveler, or just for hanging out at home and relaxing. Go to their website and you can take a look at all their great products. That is iHomeAudio.com. You'll see their apps, their accessories, and iHome is the number one brand in digital speakers. So you'll find those speakers there too. The website again, iHomeAudio.com. The sound quality cannot be beat, and the products also look really, really cool. That is iHome. Moving on episode 431 of the Sports Report podcast, some good stories now from the Summer Olympics, and there were plenty to talk about. I'm not into all of the Olympic sports. I'm sure you're the same way. You have some favorites that you like and others you could probably care less. But I do appreciate greatness regardless of the sport. And we saw some of the best athletes of all time in Rio. People that you're going to be telling your kids about, your grandkids about, that you watch them in the Olympics. Here is my Fab Five, two men, three women, not in any order here. You start with Michael Phelps. I mean, the guy is 31 years old. Talk about longevity. He took home 6 medals from Brazil, more than anybody else. And 5 of the 6 were gold. He finishes with 23 gold medals and 28 total medals. Twice as many as any other swimmer in Olympic history. Unbelievable. Usain Bolt, also part of my Fab Five, he also competed in his final Olympics. So we saw the greatest swimmer of all time and the greatest sprinter of all time. Same Olympics. Bolt won 3 more gold medals. He went 9 for 9 in his last 9 Olympic events. His 9 gold medals ties Carl Lewis. And he made it look so darn easy. I mean, that's what I'm going to remember the most about Usain Bolt. This guy, in a short race, a 100, a 200, had enough time to glance over his left shoulder, take a peek over his right shoulder, pump his fist to his chest a little bit. I mean, these races are decided by tenths of a second. And he is that fast that he can do that. Crazy. A legend, an icon in Jamaica. Katie Ledecky, only 19 years old. She won 5 medals, 4 were gold. She won the 800 free. That's the race that I'm always going to think about. She won the 800 free in a time of 8 minutes and 4 seconds. That's a world record. And that probably means nothing to you. Here's what's important. The next fastest time was 8 minutes and 16 seconds. The silver medal winner was 12 seconds behind Katie Ledecky. In swimming, that is an eternity. 12 seconds, that's like a week. That's like a month. I mean, total dominance in that race. Ledecky's only the second woman ever to sweep the 200, the 400, and the 800. Simone Biles, she has to be on the list. Only 19, great personality, high energy. 5 medals, 4 golds, just like Ledecky. The 4 golds ties an Olympic record for the most in one games among gymnasts. She won the individual all-around competition. And when you listen to her coach and her teammates, they said that she was just on a different level. Just in a zone, just that far better than anybody else. And that's greatness. Allyson Felix, I also had her on my list, kind of underrated, and everything did not go her way in the Rio Games, but she does leave Brazil with 3 more medals, giving her 9 all time. And that makes her the most decorated female track and field athlete in U.S. history. So not too shabby for Felix. So that was my Fab Five. Maybe you have some others that you think should be on the list. You can let me know on Twitter at the Sports RPT. The Sports RPT. As for the medal count, the U.S. won easily. I mean, won big. 121 total medals, 46 were gold. The previous high for the U.S. was 110 medals. That was in Beijing in 2008. China was second with 70, 51 fewer medals. This is the largest margin since 1932. The U.S. swimming team earned 33 of those medals. The U.S. track and field team brought in 32, its most since 1984. And in track and field, just to give a little perspective here, Kenya was second with 13. Jamaica, we heard so much about Jamaica and their sprinters. Jamaica was third with 11. The U.S. had 32, almost three times as many as Jamaica in track and field. Now, you know I love my hoops, right? So I got to talk some basketball. U.S. women won 101-72 versus Spain in the final there. That's six straight gold medals for them. They won by nearly 40 points per game in this tournament. I mean, that really was a dream team on the women's side. The U.S. men struggled in pool play, but turned up their defense in the final and crushed Serbia 96-66 for their third straight gold medal. When they played Serbia in pool play, it was a three-point game, and Serbia had a really good look at a three, a wide-open three that would have sent the game to overtime. This was not that close at all. Kevin Durant took over the game. He finished with 30 points. He was definitely the best player for the U.S. team. Half of their 10 games were decided by 10 points or fewer. So if you just tuned in on Sunday and saw the gold medal game and thought, wow, I mean, they just rolled over everybody, really wasn't the case. Australia gave them some trouble. Heck, France gave them trouble. And Tony Parker did not even play. He sat out with an injury. That was a tight game. Serbia, as I mentioned, only lost by three in pool play, but this was a blowout. The difference to me was on the defensive end. Early in the Olympics, I thought the U.S. was very poor, not even average, but poor on the defensive end, giving up a lot of layups. They were giving up over 90 points, and remember, these are only 40-minute games. They're not 48 minutes like in the NBA. So defense much, much better. Durant was the X factor here. Carmelo really did not play well in the tournament, but he ends up as not only the leading scorer in U.S. Olympic history, but also the leading rebounder. They put him back in, and he got another board and passed to David Robinson. Coach K steps aside now. He won his third gold medal, led the U.S. to 76 consecutive wins. His record as the national team head coach, listen to this, 88-1. And in the Olympics, a perfect 24-0. Not too bad. 89 games coached with the national team and 88 victories. So that's a look back at the Olympics. What were your highlights and your lowlights? Let me know on Twitter at the Sports RPT. The Sports RPT. Real quick, before we get to college football, I got to tell you this funny story. Talk about wrestling here. Two coaches from Mongolia stripped off their clothing in a protest. They were upset by a call by the officials that gave the bronze medal to a wrestler from Uzbekistan and took it away from their wrestler. I mean, this really you can't make up. There are about 7 seconds left in the match, and Mongolia's wrestler began running around the mat in celebration. He thought, this baby's over, I've won. When the final buzzer sounded, he fell to the mat. His coaches covered him in the Mongolian flag. They're all excited. I mean, total elation. They think they've won a medal. But, and this is a Fat Albert-sized but, officials penalized him for what he did at the end of the match, calling him for stalling. They used the term fleeing the hold or not engaging. And that point made it 7-7. He thought he won 7-6. That point made it 7-7. The Mongolians then protested the call. They lost the protest. That gave another point to the wrestler from Uzbekistan. And he ended up winning 8-7. Crazy. So as the Mongolian wrestler rolls around the mat, he's ticked off. One of his coaches goes over to the judges table and starts stomping around, starts slamming his hands on the mat. Then he rips off his shirt and starts flexing his muscles and roaring to the crowd, which they love. They're going nuts as he goes all Hulk Hogan in the Olympics. A second coach from Mongolia comes over. Not only does he take his shirt off, he was not done yet. He then dropped his drawers. Yes, he took his pants off and he piled up his clothes. He dumped it right on the judge's table. I mean, this is straight out of WWE right here. Both of the coaches from Mongolia refused to leave the mat. They had to be escorted out by the Brazilian National Security Force. I mean, geez, you got to Google this and see it. It was incredible. So that's one final story from the Summer Games. Let's talk some college football. The season's right around the corner. I can't wait. The AP preseason top 25 poll is out. Alabama is number one for the fifth time, and why not? Crimson Tide has won four national titles in the last 7 years. It's just been a ridiculous run for Nick Saban there. Bama received 33 of 61 first place votes. Clemson, which lost to Alabama 45-40 in the championship game, got 16 first place votes. Oklahoma is number three, Florida State number four, LSU number five. And then rivals Ohio State and Michigan come in at 6 and 7. Stanford, Tennessee, and Notre Dame round out the top 10. The Irish had a rough weekend. 6 players arrested in 2 separate incidents. And safety Max Redfield was dismissed from the team. And he was projected as a starter at safety. 11 through 20 in the preseason poll goes like this. Ole Miss, Michigan State, TCU, Washington, more on them in a second. And then Houston is number 15, the highest ranked non-power conference club. That's Houston. Followed by UCLA, Iowa, Georgia, Louisville, and USC. The final 5 in the top 25 are Oklahoma State, North Carolina, Baylor, a lot of turmoil there, Oregon, and Florida is number 25. 6 SEC teams in the top 25. The Pac-12 has 5. The Big Ten, the ACC, and the Big 12 each have 4. I don't think anybody's shocked that the SEC has the most. I recently interviewed my buddy Phil Steele for my radio show. Phil is just a wealth of information. If you love college football, you absolutely must get his preview magazine. It's 350 pages. I've been interviewing Phil on the radio for over 15 years now, 16, 17 years before he blew up. Now he's all over ESPN. It is crazy how much stuff he jams into that magazine. You should see the font. It's a little bit tough to read because it's so small. But here are Phil's predictions for the power conferences. He's actually calling for a first place tie in the SEC West between Alabama and LSU. Now, they play in Baton Rouge November 5th. Circle that date. In fact, get your calendar. I'm going to run down a lot of big dates in college football that you want to highlight. The Tide schedule is nuts. Listen to this. USC in the opener, at Ole Miss, at Tennessee, at LSU, and finish up with the rivalry game at home versus Auburn. Phil says Alabama has the third toughest schedule behind USC and Ole Miss, and I believe it. LSU has a lot back. 17 starters return, including Leonard Fournette, the 230-pound beast of a running back. He could very well win the Heisman. My question with the Tigers is at quarterback again, Brandon Harris. Is he going to be good enough? 54%? Too low. 13 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. They need improved play at the quarterback spot. Phil took the Vols in the SEC East. They also have 17 starters back. Tennessee is at Georgia October 1st. That could decide the East. Kirby Smart takes over now in Athens. Both Georgia and Tennessee have some legit skill position guys. Phil took Florida State over Clemson in the ACC Atlantic Division. Sean McGuire is hurt. He's going to be out another 3 weeks. So freshman DeAndre Francois will start at quarterback. The rest of the offense is back, including Dalvin Cook at running back. He ran for nearly 1,700 yards last season. The Noles host Clemson October 29th. That is a huge game. That is the matchup in the ACC. Tigers won by 10 last season. In the ACC Coastal, he went with the U. Mark Richt is the head coach now at Miami. They have 9 starters back on offense. The Canes host Florida State October the 8th, but must go to Notre Dame on October 29th. I think whoever comes out of the Atlantic, Florida State or Clemson, they're winning the ACC. Maybe a shocker for you now out of the Pac-12. Phil picks Washington to win the North after going 7-6 last year. The Huskies haven't been better than 5-4 in conference play since 2001, but Phil loves the defense, quarterbacks back, and Washington gets Stanford and USC at home, and the Huskies don't have to play UCLA with their young quarterback, Josh Rosen. Phil has UCLA winning the Pac-12 South, but he thinks that division is wide open. As for Stanford, you have to look at the schedule here. At UCLA, at Washington, at Notre Dame, and at Oregon. Hello. How's that for 4 road tests right there? Washington is Phil's number one surprise team, followed by TCU, then Iowa, Baylor, and UCLA. To the Big 12, Oklahoma is everybody's pick. Mayfield and Piron return. The Sooners open up with Houston on September 3rd. That is a big one right there. I mentioned Houston ranked number 15 in the AP poll. The Sooners play Ohio State September 17th. That is in Norman. Circle that one. They go to TCU October 1st, and then they'll meet Texas the very next week. Phil says Texas will be the most improved team in the country. Longhorns have been under 500 2 years in a row. They allowed 30 points per game last season. I'm a see-it-to-believe-it type of guy, and I need to see more from Texas. TCU loses Boykin, Doxson, and Green. Quarterback, receiver, running back there. Tough to replace those three. Art Briles is out at Baylor, and up front is their question mark there. They have very, very little experience on the offensive line and the defensive line. Finally, the Big Ten. Phil has Ohio State in the East, Iowa in the West. Only 6 starters back for Urban Meyer, but he has been raving about the talent on this squad, and he knows a little bit about having talent. They will finish up at Sparty, and their home versus Michigan. So that's when their season will be decided there late. As for Michigan, Jim Harbaugh took a 5-7 club and went 10-3 in year number one in Ann Arbor. Lots of hype, lots of buzz surrounding the Wolverines. But keep in mind, they have to go to Michigan State, to Iowa, and to Ohio State. I think they start 7-0. But then it's going to get real in a hurry for Michigan. Spartans only have 10 starters back. Connor Cook is gone at quarterback, but the defense is big time. Plus, Michigan and Ohio State go to East Lansing this season. And Michigan State beat both of those teams on the road last year. Phil believes Iowa will be even better than last season when they went 12-2. Eight starters back on defense, and they only gave up 20 points a game last year. Iowa's schedule, very, very favorable. Northwestern, Wisconsin, Michigan, Nebraska, all at home for Iowa. As for the Cornhuskers, they're number two on Phil's most improved list. They were 6-7 last year. They lost a bunch of close games. In fact, every game that they lost, they were right there. Could have won. So, who makes the national playoffs? Phil Steele has Alabama, LSU, so two from the SEC. He has Oklahoma. Oklahoma could be favored in all 12 of its games. And then Florida State. So those are his semifinalists. Bama, LSU, Oklahoma, Florida State. He is not taking the Tide to repeat. He has the Noles beating Alabama in the championship game. I'm concerned about Florida State at the quarterback position. The good news is all the skill guys are back around the quarterback. We'll find out a lot about the Noles September 5th. They take on Ole Miss in Orlando. That is one of the marquee early season games. Florida State, Ole Miss. Chad Kelly back under center for the Rebels. Really good quarterback. So who are you picking to win the national title? What about Clemson with Deshaun Watson? Tigers were 14-1 a year ago. Only four starters back on defense. They're going to put up points, though. I'll tell you that right now. Can they win at Florida State at the end of October? That is the big question for Clemson. Phil's going with Florida State. A lot of people taking Alabama. And don't make a big deal about a first-year starting quarterback in Alabama. It seems like every year they win the national championship, it's an inexperienced starting quarterback for Nick Saban. And they still manage to get the job done there. But this is coming up quick. So I thought I'd give you a little college football preview here on episode 431 of the Sports Report podcast. I'm Paul Roberts with you on the Grizz. That's grizzlyproductions.tv. New shows every Monday. Show is also free in the podcast section of iTunes. Keep those five-star reviews coming there. All right. I am not a UFC guy. I have HBO, so I still watch boxing, watch the big fights there. You know, if it's Mayweather-Pacquiao, I saw that last pay-per-view. So I still like to watch boxing. I just never got into UFC, and I know how popular it is. I'm not saying it's not, and I'll tell you how much this most recent card pulled in. But I paid the $5. I was with one of my old high school buddies and his wife, and we went to a local bar. They were carrying the fight. It was only $5, and you got to see all of them. So hey, for $5, not a bad deal at all. And wow, was I ever impressed. Saturday night in Vegas, Conor McGregor versus Nate Diaz. Epic is the word that comes to mind. McGregor 20-3 now, Diaz 19-11. Diaz beat McGregor first time around. This time it was a majority decision for McGregor in UFC 202. The welterweight matchup is a front runner, they're saying, for fight of the year. And I totally buy that. Two judges scored it 48-47 for McGregor. One judge had it as a draw, 47 all. ESPN.com also had it 47 all. I thought it was very, very tight too. McGregor, who suffered his first loss to Diaz back in March, dropped Diaz three times in the first two rounds. Was catching him with the left hands. Diaz survived the early knockdowns, and then he came back with a vengeance in the third round. He dominated the third round, outlanded McGregor 49-26 in what they call significant strikes. 23 more, according to Fight Metric. Fight Metric also said Diaz landed 271 total strikes compared to 190 for McGregor. McGregor agreed on TV to a third fight, but he said This one's not going to be at 170 pounds. He said he came up to 170, faced adversity. He wants the trilogy, but it's going to be on his terms. He told Diaz that he wants him back at 155 pounds, and then they'll get it on. McGregor early caught Diaz with some kicks, and that set up his left hand, which resulted in the knockdowns. Diaz went down in the first round, then went down twice in the second round. And I'm sure some people thought, oh, this baby is over. McGregor this time, unlike the first fight with Diaz, he did not go rushing in looking for the kill and attacking there. He just motioned Diaz to get back up, and then they went at it again. Diaz, man, I mean, did he take some punishment? His face was all bloody, swollen. But the third round, like I said, I mean, he really was in control. And then he got his only takedown in the final seconds of the fifth and final round. He helped McGregor up. They hugged. Some mutual respect right there. But what a bout. And the whole time I'm thinking, as we got into the fourth and especially in the fifth round, the whole time I'm thinking, this is going to be leading to a third fight. I mean, there's no way that they're going to give this decision to Diaz. I thought it was McGregor all the way because, hey, nothing better than a three-peat, right? So they need to have another fight. Listen to how much this brought in. Nearly $7.7 million. $7,692,000. The fifth highest in UFC history. The attendance was 15,539. But, I mean, what's bringing in the money is the pay-per-view. That is crazy. $7.7 million. I think they definitely need a third fight. People would watch it for sure after this one. This was a roller coaster ride. I mean, you think McGregor's winning easily, then Diaz comes back, and one of the judges did score it a draw. It tells you how close it was. Diaz took a ton of punishment. It kept coming, kept coming, never quit. Give him a lot of respect. Like I said, $5 is all it cost me, and I got to see it. And that was a classic. Really, really good fight. So I wanted to get to some UFC as well. And that'll do it for episode 431 of the Sports Report. Tell your friends, family members, your coworkers about the show. We're with you every Monday. Enjoy the week. Have fun out there. And let me know what you thought regarding the Olympics, the highs, the lows, college football, the AP poll. Who is too high? Who is too low? Who do you think gets in the semis, the final four, and who wins it all? Let me know on Twitter at the Sports RPT. The Sports RPT. I'll talk to you again next Monday, everybody. This has been episode number 431. I'm Paul Roberts on GrizzlyProductions.tv and iTunes.